Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. As salespeople, we've all been through that sales onboarding that's just too quick, and then we've been left to fend for ourselves. But there are a couple of ways that top performing sales reps can be constantly improving, and they may not be the ways that you think. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about why improv and practice will make you a top performing sales rep. She's the professor of marketing at Bryant University and is the co-founder of Rainmakers, a virtual platform for training and assessing sales talent. She's a TEDx speaker, the recipient of the prestigious American Marketing Association Sales Educator of the Year Award, and co-author of the Little Black Book of Social Media, Strategies to Ignite Your Business, Influencer, and Professional Brand. Dr. Stephanie Boyer, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. I'm very excited to be here with you today.
I'm so excited to have you. Let's talk about that first piece, about practice. Tell me just what you mean by practice to start us off.
Practice by role-playing with a colleague, role-playing with your manager, being able to simulate what it will be like in the call. When you're having that tough conversation, when you're nervous and you're not sure what's going to happen next, to be able to simulate those scenarios of high stress or the unpredictable nature of the sales call.
Very interesting. And what is your kind of experience around role plays? Where are you drawing your data and your experience from in this?
Sure. So I'm a sales professor at Bryant University. I've been teaching sales there since 2012. I sold before that. And I was always wondering, you know, why is it that sometimes a sales call goes really well, and then sometimes it doesn't go really well? And so when I went to get my PhD, I really wanted to study that. I wanted to study training and understand how adults learn and really break down, especially that sales call. So we started doing sales competitions at the university level when we were teaching students how to sell. You can't teach them how to sell without getting them into a sales conversation. So mm-hmm. We started like that, and they were actually having a conversation based on a case with an employer. The employer was pretending to be the buyer, and there was a panel of judges in the room that were all salespeople, sales managers, or sales executives, and they would critique the students as they would practice. And so we realized that by having the students actually practice with people that are experts in selling and get advice, that their selling skills improved immensely. But in the meantime, when they were practicing with each other. And that was a little bit challenging because they don't really know what they're supposed to say. Mm-hmm. So as we went forward, we started having big sales competitions where we'd bring many schools together, and the students would practice with employers, they would practice with their coaches, they would practice with each other, and it would become more and more competitive. But then over time, we realized that it just is so difficult as your sales program is growing to have enough time to practice with everyone. And so we actually created an artificially intelligent customer bot that will take the place of that manager or that professor or that teammate in class, or, you know, the uncle that the students sometimes try to role play with, or their parents or their grandparents that maybe don't know how to give the best advice about selling. A lot has changed maybe since that grandparent was in sales. And so we simulated that conversation. The students now will speak with an automated customer bot, and they'll go through the entire sales process and get feedback right away. So we've kind of gone from practicing with peers all the way to now practicing with a robot as much as you like. And so far with the robot, the students have done almost 200,000 role plays.
Wow. That's a lot of role plays. And how many, or what kind of results have you seen? Like, what did you learn across that huge sample size of these role plays being performed?
The first thing that I learned was that we can expect a lot more from our teams than we think. Before, I would have students submit to me a role play once a week. And I thought that that was a lot because I couldn't keep up with it. But I was the big bottleneck for the students because I couldn't give them the feedback. So what I realized that when we're able to use technology, we can do so much more and we can expect a lot more from our students. I actually had a student last semester, John Fuller. He did 350 role plays with the bot. Now, I used to get 4 to 6 role plays from my students in the semester each. And now I'm able to get, 50, 75, 100. I've challenged all my students this semester to be in the 100 plus club. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we actually notice is that once you hit a certain level, you start to become much more proficient going through the sales process.
Okay. And what is that level? What's the threshold that you guys uncovered?
What we notice is that once students hit 70 role plays, they become so much more confident and more satisfied in that sales conversation. They start to commit some of these steps to memory. So we don't want them to be a robot, but we want them to understand some of the fundamentals of the sales process.
Okay. It's like it becomes sort of, I guess like muscle memory around the 70, and they're able to kind of like roll with the punches, have a natural conversation, but be able to adapt to any scenario. Whereas prior to that 70, they're maybe having to like actively think about how to handle an objection, what to ask next, what question, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So there's a basic process that you can really use and you can apply. For instance, when students are getting that objection, their natural instinct is just to be defensive. Because when someone gives them pushback, they're like, I'm getting attacked. I need to be defensive. And then what ends up happening is they try to handle the objection, but they didn't really hear the objection or they didn't understand the objection. Or when they heard it, they thought they knew what the client was saying, but they were totally wrong. Because we know usually objections might have a layer on top of it of what's really happening. You have to dig into it. And so with this, the students learn that the first step is really understanding by either clarifying, asking a question, or just, stating that they are on the right track before they go down the road of trying to show empathy, which yes, you can do that with a bot. It's a little strange for students at first to show empathy to a bot, but then, going through the process and showing that there's evidence to back up what their claim is to help either educate the customer, or win them over to their side. And then the next step is really getting that agreement that they really aren't concerned anymore, making sure that they can get past that. Because that's another common problem students have is just, they don't make sure that the buyer is now past this. And so then it's constantly in the buyer's mind. They didn't go move past it. Mm-hmm. And then the buyer is never going to say yes. Yeah. So it's little things like that of trying to learn how to more effectively have a conversation.
Okay. So it's like just the nuances that you can't encounter all of the different nuances in a handful of role plays a week. You really are only practicing a handful of scenarios. Whereas once you get into 70, I'm sure you start to see like repeat because there is like a kind of narrow range really of objections that exist. They like stem from a few different insecurities or risks or whatever. And so you start to encounter these repeats and all that stuff when you hit that threshold of 70.
It's so true. And, as a professor and with my colleagues that are all over the world, we've all kind of come together and we recognize that we have these similar problems that our students have. And I mean, really anybody starting to sell has when they're first starting out. And so we've kind of pulled together our minds and worked with some executives to say, what are some of these challenges? And they're things that maybe you just don't even realize, starting a sentence with a filler when you're having a conversation because you're thinking out loud. Those are the typical things that we see. Or maybe a client is saying that they just had something horrible happen. The student realizes, oh my goodness, I can help you. And so they say out loud something like, awesome, right? And then they go right into the thing and they don't really do the proper discovery. They don't really dig down. Mm-hmm. And then their empathy is totally off because a person just told you they have this horrible thing happen. You're saying awesome because you can help, but you really don't even understand the problem yet. And so we're trying to work some of those kinks out of the conversation that the students are having.
Very cool. Very cool. So let's talk about implementing this in a sales org for those salespeople, sales leaders that are listening to us right now, knowing that they've now got to implement more practice because really they want to get their people past that threshold of 70 role plays, get that spike in performance. How would they structure that? Who would all be involved? What should they role play? How would we do that internally at a sales org?
Sure. So, I mean, if you typically a sales manager or subject matter expert typically would come up with the scenario that they want to practice, the typical types of things that happen that go wrong that they want to train into their team. And they'll just do role plays live. And then when they're ready to actually turn that into technology because they want to get their people doing, 100 role plays so that way, instead of practicing on the customers where you can lose out on revenue, you're practicing with the robot. They just start to design the conversation. They talk about the scenario and they identify what's happening within that. What are the needs of the client? And basically just design the scenario like you would in a role play if you did it. And then the tech team goes through and identifies what are some of the common challenges? What are the common things people say? And even though we've been working with students, we've actually learned a lot because students say the craziest things because they're not trained yet necessarily. Mm-hmm. Some of them are in great sales programs and they are already trained, but there are it's all the students that are practicing this. And what we find with organizations, it's so much easier because the people in organizations have already been trained a little bit on what they need to say. So it's a pretty simple process. You just go in and you fill out a form of, what do you want your avatar to look like? What do you want the scenario to look like? Who's the customer? And then the tech team designs it.
Very cool. And then how can the kind of data that you gather through these role plays inform managing your team on an ongoing basis?
Oh, sure. So what you get as a manager is you get an admin and you're able to oversee all the people that are on your team. So how it works in the university setting is you'll have coaches from a variety of different schools. I think we've had around 170 coaches at this point, and each coach is a faculty member. Some schools have one faculty member and some schools have, five faculty members. And so the faculty member can see everybody in their class, and that's like a manager seeing everybody on their team. And you can actually look at the data to see how everybody on your team is doing or in your class. You can compare your classes and you can compare your classes to all the other classes in the university. So if you're a company, you can have your different divisions, you can have them all compare and see how are they performing when it comes to opening up the call, having that conversation smoothly going into your discovery. Based on what your sales process is, that's really how it's designed. So the process that we typically use is that approach, discovery, presentation, objections, and close. And everything is just designed around that. So whatever your metrics are, you can compare everybody in real time. You can see how people have improved their learning over time. So what we're seeing is a big uptick on interest for people that, it's a little bit more challenging. You have to be very careful with what you say, for instance, in financial services or in the medical industry. And you want to be certain that your people are not saying the wrong thing because that risk is so high.
Yeah, makes sense. Very cool. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the other thing we talked about in the intro, which is improv. So how did you discover improv as a tool for sales training?
Well, I was a PhD student at University of South Florida, and I saw someone doing improv in the business college with this specialty honors group. And they were mirroring each other with their hands. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. Why are you doing that? And they were saying, well, we need to be able to get people to really pay attention and be in the moment. And at that time, I was really on my way out to start my job at Bryant University. And my first class, I came into sales and I thought, you know what, let me try that. I think that there really could be something here. And what I notice is when I have my students start their role plays, they would get started and they would just kind of look up at me like a deer in the headlights. And they'd say, I don't know what to say. And they would just stop. And so once we would bring in the improv, the comedian to class, which everybody was excited about because they'd say, oh, good, my professor's not teaching today. We have a comedian teach the class. And so their defense mechanisms were down and they're like, oh, we're going to have fun today. But once we started doing some improv games, that behavior stopped. The students mm-hmm. no longer would just look up at me and say, I don't know what to say. Because they would learn how to start thinking on their feet and just go with the information that they knew. It wouldn't mean that they knew more about mm-hmm. the case or about sales. It just meant that they were ready to move forward and they were starting to get comfortable being uncomfortable. Mm. So it all started in 2009 when I brought Melissa Bowler. She was the head of the Providence Improv Guild into class. And she started doing some simple improv exercises. And then together we started working on identifying what are the specific things that we need to improve in sales and how can we modify these a little bit to become more salesy type of exercises instead of just, you know, like the whose line is it anyways, although those are really fun exercises too.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did those exercises look like in the ones that you kind of adapted for sales?
Sure. Well, anytime you do a sales role play, that's always a lot of fun. There's an exercise called the Anything Store, and that gets at trying to ask the right questions. So you're in a store and the buyers have specific needs, but they don't share those. And it's the job of the seller to come in and ask all the questions. Since they're at the Anything Store, they have anything. And what we notice is that the students often begin and try to just sell what they think the typical solution is instead of asking the right questions and drilling down. Mm-hmm. So typically you'll have a group of maybe four students in front of an entire class that are doing this type of scenario. We might just have other drills where we'll come up with ideas, maybe from the audience, of horrible things that you could say in a sales call and what you could do to try to recover. And so every so often in a call, you'd have to pick up a line and say it, and then you have to try to recover from this. And then there's just a lot of exercises that you can do in the beginning to get your brain thinking and moving fast. So there's an exercise I love to do before I go on stage. It's called the shakedown. Where you start to shake out your nerves and you're yelling numbers and you're jumping up and down. And then there's also another game called Name Five Things. So you turn to the person to your left and you say something like, name five things that are pizza toppings, right? And the person will say, you know, pepperoni. And then everybody in the circle around them goes, one, and they clap their hands. And then they keep naming. And then what ends up happening is around three, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't know any more pizza topping. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be states. It could be animals. It could be, usually people get colors. Okay. But all of a sudden their brain kind of freezes around three. So I usually say name five or six things that are a certain type. And it's a great way to get people warmed up, to get their blood flowing. And then they don't realize that they're learning. But all of a sudden they're leaning in, they're focused, they're paying attention, and they're actually having a much better time because they are a little bit uncomfortable with everybody clapping and waiting for them to say the next thing. It definitely turns the nerves on a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But as you're saying, it gets you thinking on your feet where you don't then do this like, I don't know what to say next, which people do on role plays. They do on early sales calls, like if they're making calls in their first week or so, like I know myself and one of the guys at Predictable Revenue, like stumbled and said something that he like surprised himself, like had a total just like brain block, said something and then hung up the phone because he was like, that is not what I meant to say, couldn't recover, hung up the phone. So that is something that you definitely, that's an extreme scenario, but you definitely like encounter that feeling. And if you don't know where to go, it's terrifying. And then you have such panic and then you just can't recover. But if you've like worked this muscle where you then know how to just keep the ideas flowing, recover, kind of let it all roll off. That's such a vital skill to have in sales.
It's so true. And you don't want your first time having that experience with a customer You want the first time to be in a very safe place where it's okay to fail. You're encouraged to fail often and fail fast. And so we try to create that environment. And I've even had my students say, like, I've never been so happy about failing before. And it's like they're failing the class, but they're rewarded by putting themselves outside of their comfort zone in that safe place so they can feel that discomfort. It's the same thing with the role plays, right? It's just, you know, you don't want the first time someone's having a sales conversation with the client, and you definitely don't want the first time that they're having that conversation and they don't know what they're supposed to say next with the client either.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you guys learn in applying improv to sales training? What kind of impact did you see there?
Well, I always knew that it was huge. I always knew that my students, whenever they did that, that they were higher performers after. Mm-hmm. I would even have employers, they would come and they'd say, what are you feeding the kids at Bryant? And what's in the water there? They're doing so well. They're able to do role plays. You know, they're thinking on their feet. They're adapting. They're problem solvers. And so we were kind of scratching our heads because we're like, you know, what is this? How do we test this? What's actually happening here? And we also noticed that when women came in, they usually felt like, oh, I don't know if sales is really for me. I'm going to take the class because I heard it was going to help me, but I don't see myself as a salesperson. And then by the end of the class, they were getting jobs and they were winning competitions. And so we're just like, what is happening here? So we started to collect some data. We do some sales training and consulting with companies, but then we also do the improv training with the students. And so we were collecting the data from the men and the women. And what we were noticing was that when the women would start out in the class and come in, their level of confidence overall was lower than the guys. The guys came in and they already felt like, I can do this. You know, even if they weren't qualified, they felt like they could do that. Even if they had the same skill level or less, then they felt like, I could absolutely do this. I'm good at this. So there was higher confidence in the men, low confidence in the women. And then also we saw the levels of empathy in the women were higher and they were lower in the men. So that was just kind of the initial finding before we did anything. We started doing the improv training and we noticed that the levels changed. So the levels of confidence in the women actually went up, but the levels of empathy in the men also went up. So it was one of those trainings where we thought, oh, this is great because it's not just helping one gender, it's actually helping everybody to perform better. So we saw a little bit of overconfidence in the men that was corrected with empathy, because when you're doing improv, you're on stage and you have to really focus and pay attention to your partners on stage to keep the game going. So you're reading body language, you're understanding nonverbals much better. You have to listen. You have to solve problems as a team. And you can't do that if you can't empathize. So we saw a sustained increase in the confidence in women and also the empathy in the men. And that was published in the Journal of Selling. There was a special issue for women in sales back in 2020.
Very cool. So I'd love to hear how to implement the improv stuff virtually. Now that we're kind of stuck, you know, in these remote work scenarios, how, when you can't all be in the same room playing these games, how do you think that a sales team could implement the improv kind of training and practice into their virtual team life?
Sure. Well, I always love improv in person. If I ever have a choice, I always want to be in person for that, because you're like walking around the room and you're using your physical body too. But when we do it online, we actually use breakout rooms. And so people can prepare and work as a team. And then they'll have to come and they'll have to do their skit or their improvisation in front of everybody. So what will typically happen is the audience will continue to get information about what's about to happen to the people that are in the other breakout room that don't get to know what's going on. And then they have to come in and they'll get direction and they'll get redirection on what they're supposed to do in this conversation that they're having. If they're trying to sell something, they might use a yes and game. Mm-hmm. So that way every single person's line is connected by a yes and to build on the story. So you really have an audience that has just become virtual here. So it actually takes a little bit less time because you don't have to get people to get together and find their way out of the room and make sure they can't hear you when they're in a breakout room. You know that that's all taken care of. So some of that is actually pretty fun. And we'll also use the chat function. So we might show some images on the screen, and then we'll just have the audience, instead of taking themselves off mute, depending on how big the audience is, they'll start to use the chat function, and we'll get some interesting and fun ideas there. So it really is a little bit different. Maybe you wouldn't feel like you were comfortable enough to yell out something in the audience, but when you're virtual, you might feel comfortable enough to say something in the chat. So
yeah,
it seems that you actually get a little bit more participation in some activities that way too.
Nice. Very cool. Well, that's amazing. So we've walked through practice, how the role plays make the world of difference, how you've got that threshold of 70 role plays before you really see that spike in performance, because you get that comfort, you get, you know, knowledge of the nuances, you can leverage your empathy rather than be kind of panicking about what you should be saying next. And then the improv side of things. So how that kind of works these muscles that we need just as much, in a sales role. So these two things kind of fit hand in hand and are really like the two sides of the things that we need to be practicing in sales. If people want to learn more from you, Stephanie, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
The best place to reach me is just on LinkedIn, because cool. I'm never going to change my LinkedIn. You know, I'm not going to change my name. So I'm right there. As much as emails change, that's where I prefer to connect with people.
Perfect. And if they want to learn more about Rainmaker and the bot and all the data that you guys have, where can they do that?
So we have a site. So Rainmakers, that's the tricky thing. You know, it's pronounced Rainmakers, but it's spelled without any of the vowels. So it's RNMKRS. So if they go to RNMKRS.org, then they can see our site. They can see the companies that are participating in the schools, the winners, and for companies that are interested in hiring SDRs and finding them right out of the school, that's for sure the place to come, because we've got so many schools, so many students, over 12,000 students already in just a couple of years have gone through the system.
Nice. Very cool. We'll make sure to drop a link to that in the show notes in the blog so that everyone can check it out as well. But thank you so much, Dr. Stephanie, for joining us on this episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. It was such a pleasure having you.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. And good luck with this. I've been listening to the podcast and it's awesome. So
thank you so much.
For sure, everybody listening, make sure you share it with your friends. It's a great podcast.
Yes, thank you. Do exactly that. And please, if you guys haven't already, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests on, like our guest, Dr. Stephanie, today. Thank you guys all for watching, and we'll catch you next time.